It's the E-Commerce Master Plan Podcast. Here to help you solve your marketing problems and grow your e-commerce business. Cutting through the hype to bring you inspiration and advice from the e-commerce sector and beyond. Here's your host, Chloe Thomas.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the E-Commerce Master Plan Podcast. I'm Chloe, the creator and the host of this award-winning show, and it's my aim every episode to help you find ways to improve your e-commerce business. So thank you for tuning in. And I would, of course, love to know how the show helps you, and you can let me know about that via social media by using the hashtag EcomMasterPlan. In today's episode, we're talking to someone who has experienced sales uplifts and overall sales falls across their two brands. And we're getting quite candid about how to deal with it when your sales have dropped off. We talk about the joys of bootstrapping. We talk about tech stack. We talk about what to do with your media spend, analyzing, how to cope, how to manage this. Lots and lots of great thoughts, ideas and insights coming up. My guest is really nice and candid about the experience they've been going through. So you are going to learn a lot here. And if whether your sales have gone up or whether your sales have gone down recently, this is a really useful episode for all of you. Before we get into that though, please do check out the sponsors. This podcast is brought to you by Klaviyo, the ultimate e-commerce marketing platform for email and SMS messaging. Whether you're launching your e-commerce business or taking your brand to the next level, Klaviyo gives you the tools to get growing faster. That's why it's trusted by over 38,000 e-commerce brands. Build your contact list, send emails that pop, and create marketing moments that build valuable customer relationships over any distance. Get started for free today. Visit klaviyo.com/masterplan to create your free account. That's klaviyo.com/masterplan. Klaviyo is the leading end-to-end discovery platform for e-commerce businesses, enabling merchants to deliver personalized and intelligent search and navigation experiences for their shoppers. Klaviyo's machine learning algorithm and rich NLP takes search queries beyond keyword-based matching, delivering exactly what shoppers want and more. Regardless of the platform, Klaviyo provides a seamless integration process for all retailers. Try it out for free at klaviyo.com/schedule-a-demo. That's klevu.com/schedule-a-demo. And now to introduce today's special guest. Ian Leslie is the CMO at US homewares brands Industry West and Favour. It all started with Industry West in 2010 and then Favour launched in 2019. Now the two sites typically grow at 25% per year with sales over $10 million a year. Hello, Ian.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you here. How did you get involved in e-commerce in the first place?
Yeah. So I actually was a journalist out of school and worked for about 5 years as a journalist. And then as print started to die and, you know, some different social media platforms started to grow and just web in general started to grow, I started to work in economic development as a jack of all marketing guy, you know, and when you're head of marketing in a small group, you do everything from, you know, the Squarespace site to the social media to everything. And which took me to work in higher ed, where I was leading lead generation and demand gen in higher ed recruitment here in the States in a university in Georgia. And finally ended up in e-commerce, where I took a lot of those lead gen, demand gen skills over to e-com and worked with Industry West, which was founded by a couple of good friends of mine.
So having myself worked a little bit in lead gen, as well as a lot in e-commerce, I found the first time I encountered as a marketer, the first time I got to see e-commerce stats, I got incredibly overexcited about the richness of the data. It's not just, oh, they converted. The second they converted, you get an idea of the quality. Did you have a similar kind of aha moment?
Yeah, that's great. I've never really thought of that. It's because when you're just dealing in lead gen, demand gen, or lead gen, you're not seeing the entire funnel. A lot of the time, and then you get into a lot of the conversation of marketing versus sales, and a lot of those arguments, right? And for me in higher ed, it was marketing or versus admission. So like I was bringing in all these high school students who were raising their hands, saying they wanted to learn more about the university, and then you know, if they died on the vine at admission, I'm, you know, pointing my finger at admission. Admission's pointing their finger at me, saying that they're not good prospects, you know, and which is, you know, is typical on the sales side. But when you deal with e-commerce, you get to see the full funnel and you get to see that prospect lead come in the top and exit the bottom or not, and figure out, you know, how did they, why did they exit, and what did you do well, or what are you not doing well? And I mean, you become addicted with the numbers, and you become, you know, I think even my kids, you know, they've become accustomed to looking at, you know, the live view of Google Analytics to see how many people are on the site and how many people are on the cart page and all that. You know, you just become pretty addicted to it. It's fun.
Ah, cool. You're same as me then. Once you've gone e-commerce, I don't think there's any going back personally. Too many stats, too many good stats. Well, look, Ian, you and the guys at Industry West and at Favor, you've had a pretty unique experience of the pandemic hitting and affecting sales, because one of the brands went up and the sales on the other one kind of sank. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know that I would say sank for Industry West, but changed, definitely changed. Mm. You know, so we're dealing with two very different verticals under one umbrella of an organization. So Industry West, you know, obviously we're dealing in sofas, tables, chairs, lighting, and mostly to the trade. About 70% of our customers are to the trade. And when I say the trade, you know, I'm talking about whether it's a mom and pop pub or a cafe or pizza shop that, you know, is buying, you know, 20, 30 stools, or whether it's internal or external procurement for, say, a Google or a Facebook or an Airbnb, or gosh, I mean, we've done New York Stadium, like a dining hall in Yankee Stadium. We've done a number of sports facilities here in the States. We've done, you know, really tons of office space for SaaS companies that I'm sure you're familiar with, like Yotpo. We've done like SeatGeek. So that's what I talk about when I talk about to the trade. So what we've seen is, and in Favor, of course, you're dealing with more home decor, more, you know, direct, much more direct to consumer. And the AOVs are obviously shifting with that. So with Industry West, you're dealing with an AOV that's typically a monthly house payment, if not more. Whereas, you know, Favor, you're dealing AOVs in the 100 and 150. So amidst like what's happening with COVID and the pandemic, I mean, I think we've seen obviously the trade back off, and we're seeing much more direct to consumer with Industry West, which is lowering our AOVs. And actually our cost per acquisition has gone down. Our transactions have gone up, but our AOV's gone down. So it's, you know, finding that balance of putting more and more ad dollars into lower AOVs. Now with Favor, we definitely struck a chord and saw like incredibly exponential growth. In that April May time period, and outpaced Cyber Week by nearly 180%.
Wow!
It's been interesting. For Industry West, I mean, I think, again, since dealing so much with the trade, and the trade is a little bit of an old-fashioned vertical in that, you know, they'll browse your site and even create carts on your site with their discounts, but will still screenshot it and send it to a rep to complete the checkout. And I think we've just seen, you know, the trade just those sales orders, those purchases just slow down because people are so unsure if people are going to go back into offices or if restaurants are going to open. And just, so we've actually seen web pick up quite a bit on both sites. Web picking up on Favor, where it's always web, has been great and shown overall growth. Web picking up on Favor, but the rest of the sales not keeping pace is where, you know, where we've seen, you know, the drop off.
So it's been, as I said in the beginning, you're in a quite that unique situation, because there's a lot of our listeners who've experienced big uplifts and, you know, dealt with all the challenges of that with the, you know, the back end systems, getting stock and all the rest of it, and, you know, the decision of what to do about the marketing. And then you've got a lot of people who are on the scenario where, you know, sales have just fallen through the floor, and there's not many who get to experience, obviously not fallen through the floor in your case with Industry West, but who've seen both the ups and the downs. And you mentioned about within the stats there, and I think this is one of the things which makes it so difficult, is that even if sales have gone up, often the AOVs have gone down. And then because of demand in the marketing space, the cost of acquisition completely changes. So you're having to completely redo your models on what you can even afford as a cost per acquisition because of the AOV mix and the customer mix. That's what I would have found with a couple of businesses. Did you find that you were having to make different marketing decisions to your normal?
Yeah, I mean, I think... Yeah, I mean, the easy answer is yes. I'll add another level of complexity there is that, I mean, we didn't get into a little bit of the history of our company, but I mean, we are entirely bootstrapped. You know, we don't have, we're not a venture-backed company. So it's not like we have runway to burn to get through this and be able to, you know, sustain months and weeks or weeks and months of lower AOV orders and just make up the difference with burning cash. So, I mean, I think for us, it's okay. Typically, I'm looking at some of our best return on ad spend. And I don't know if I use the term ROAS. I don't know if that's, you know, everyone is the term everyone's familiar with.
We can use ROAS. So ROAS is the return on advertising spend, which is one of the, it's a cost per acquisition method, which takes into account the AOV, which makes it very useful when you've got very different AOVs going on in a business.
Right.
So yeah, plow on.
So yes, I mean, I think I'm looking at ROAS that's at an all-time high for web, but is definitely like a top 10 for us overall, but is not reaching that top three for us overall when you take into account rep sales, et cetera, or brick and mortar that was now shuttered for us. So it's like I can keep, and web is great, and web is going to help us pay salary and help us pay our overhead and pay our rent and everything. But web's not going to get us into that profitability mode. So it's like, had I kept spending, there would have been a point of diminishing returns. And I have to, especially as everyone's running a lot of sales right now, whether it's free shipping or, you know, 20% off plus free shipping or whatever it is, and that's cutting into your margins. So, I mean, it's really critical that, I mean, I think we look at the numbers. I mean, I look at ROAS numbers daily. I look at overall numbers weekly, and then we look at budget numbers monthly. And, you know, taking like Memorial Day did great, but it was at the cost of 20% free shipping. So at the end of the month, like, what's our bottom line margin look like? And, you know, are we comfortable moving forward with those smaller margins? So yeah, I mean, it's a balancing act. It's certainly a balancing act. And one, to be frank, I'm probably only 80% equipped to walk the tightrope in terms of my brain power, which is why I definitely need to call on others to help me within our organization.
And you mentioned there that you know, you look at certain things on a certain frequencies. Have you found that frequency of review has accelerated because things are changing so quickly?
Yes, certainly. I mean, I think particularly, I mean, at the most basic level, cash flow. I think, you know, how are we just daily, if not more so, just what's the cash flow? How much do we spend to generate that cash? Where are we overall? I mean, and I look at all of it. I mean, the data is so, there's so much data, and the reporting that we have is really pretty great in terms of like just whether it's automated emails generated out of our ERP or whether it's, you know, I mean, I'm getting a ping every time someone makes a purchase. So I really know everything that's going on all the time. It becomes a little bit obsessive compulsive, but but yeah, I mean, I think especially now you have to and you can't. Whereas a year ago, if we had one slow day, two slow days, even three slow days in a row, you get a little concerned and you say, "Hey, what's going on?" And you check with your digital marketing team, you know, your media buys, and how is that? What are you seeing here? What are you seeing there? And I mean, now it's like, "Hey, we had a slow morning. Like, what are you seeing? What are you seeing on the media spend side?" Definitely.
And you mentioned media spend a couple of times there, and you mentioned that because you have the physical store that's whilst it's closed, you're still having to pay for it. And you've obviously got the infrastructure of the sales team who deal with those trade customers. It's crucial that the web is there and is keeping you in business and keeping things ticking over. But that obviously because of that scenario, you're minimizing all cost you can, and that hence the media spend has gone down. Was it an easy decision to cut the media spend, or have you literally just gone, we're just cutting, you know, half of everything? Or was it more a case of, let's be clever about what we cut?
Yeah, I think it's be clever. I think it's also, I think we start at the top, right? So we start at, like, our media spend is basically, we look at our media spend to be a percentage of top line. This is what we were projecting toward. It's not going to happen. We've already seen in the first 2 weeks that during pandemic or whatever, that we're definitely taking a cut. So we're going to have to back off accordingly. Let's back off X percent and see where we land. And so we're definitely strategic and kind of base it around, like, our new estimated top line is. Let's say down 20%. So we need to adjust spend accordingly. I'll be frank though, like, seeing what we did in May and the success of web, I need to look at the final numbers and see where we are at the bottom line. But I mean, I do have a little bit of remorse of not spending enough. Perhaps I was too conservative. I think people do. I do get accused of maybe being a little bit too conservative on the media spend side. And I don't know if that's, maybe this is, like, it needs to be a counseling session. I don't know if it, like, if I don't trust myself enough. I don't trust the numbers enough. I don't trust that, like, the trends enough. Like, I feel like I dabble in, like, day trading a lot. And I'm like, it's like, you know, at any moment, I feel like it could all go south, you know, like the trends tell me that we're doing 8x ROAS over 6 weeks. And I should trust that, but I don't.
I find that. You know, because I've been talking to a few people on the podcast about this. I've been talking to a few people we've had on the podcast who we didn't talk about this whilst we were recording. I've been talking to some others as well. And I think, you know, the thing about ad spend when it comes to your Google ads and your Facebook ads and your Instagram ads is once that money's spent, you can't get it back. So I think in times like these, I think the better thing is to be cautious about that spend, because you can easily spend in a day what would be someone's salary for half a month. And it's like, that's an error which could, so I think it's right to be cautious. I don't think you should beat yourself up about it at all. But I find that there's one of the interesting things I think about the US versus, I'm imagining here, I have no stats to back this up. So Ian, feel free to tell me if I'm talking absolute.
Those are my favorite kinds of stats.
Yeah, cool. Okay, we'll roll with it.
The ones that we can't back up.
I have no data for this at all. But in the UK, whilst we have slightly different things going on within Wales and Northern Ireland and Scotland, we're basically, the whole country is basically taking the same approach to lockdown and release of lockdown and financial support. Whereas in the US, you've essentially got 52 separate countries taking different approaches to lockdown in different places, and the medicine of it, or, you know, the science of it all actually hitting in different ways, which I guess must make, I mean, it's hard. What I'm trying to say is it's hard enough in the UK where everyone's basically having the same, all the consumers are basically having the same experience compared to what it must be in the US, where you've got one state doing this and another state doing that.
Yeah.
It's a whole other ball game.
I mean, I think for us, it was early on that was the case, when it was unclear how each state was going to react and whether, you know, how shipping was going to react and whether people were going to be able to receive. And we were really going on a state by state going on a state by state procedure. And that was tricky. I think now a little less so as things are opening up and everything is a little bit more, and we've seen, you know, weeks, months of, people are able to receive their stuff pretty much without issue. Again, more so on the residential side. I think it's been tricky. I think what makes it a little bit easier for us is that we really target some some major metro areas. So it's, you know, it makes it a little easier in dealing with furniture as opposed to t-shirts is like, you can be pretty buckshot with your approach when you're dealing with a $25, $20 t-shirt, right? Like anyone in any of those 52 countries, as you mentioned, can probably purchase one of those t-shirts. When you're dealing with, you know, $5,000 sofas, I mean, you're really needed to target your demo a little bit more, particularly and more so in the geo, right? I mean, I think it's more so, it's, you know, more capital areas, more urban areas, you know.
So you're already doing quite a lot of geographic targeting.
Exactly. More city centers, you know, and less Poughkeepsie, New York, as I kind of mentioned. But yeah, I think that. So I think our targeting has already kind of been there. But yeah, I think it's, you make a great point. I mean, there's so many different components of this that just make it so complex.
Yeah, you almost have to like wait and see what the stats look like each week, and then because trying to guess what the consumers are about to do is I found nigh on impossible.
Right.
So on the kind of the flip side of the marketing, we know you've reduced the media spend and cut back a lot in those areas. But what I found with some other retailers is that whether sales have been going up or sales have been going down, they still have marketing resource, human beings, and budget to spend, and they've ended up putting that budget into areas they possibly wouldn't have done. So for example, I know of companies who have seen big uplifts but haven't got the stock to supply it, so they've cut back spend, you know, the hard and fast stuff that works all the time, so they're redeploying their resource into social media and SEO and those softer things, so they've got it ready to pay back in the long term. Has that been something you've been doing whilst you've been cutting back on the spend?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think there are some aspects where we've put efforts into while cutting back on the spend. To your point, I say, for instance, one is how Google has opened up shopping to everyone has really required us to focus a lot of man hours onto optimizing products for PLAs, or it's not so much PLAs now, just feeds, you know, the shopping feed. So, you know, doing SEO specific to the shopping feed. You know, we've tried to do more with just general organic content, so more blogs, more content marketing in that regard, more kind of storytelling, which I think has been important, even to the extent of, you know, going out to our customer base and asking them to provide us with their, you know, work from home COVID stories. And we put up a blog sharing some of those. So, I mean, I think focusing more on that end, you know, again, for us, it's like when we have to look at cutting, we have to look at cutting across the board. And I kind of keep going back to a common theme for me and a lot of the talks I do is just the pros and the cons of being part of a bootstrapped company. So it's not like I could say, but I can take this money and pour into dev and work on all these projects I've been wanting to work on, you know, while I wait out the economy, because it's all really tied together. I mean, we have taken on one project that we will work toward that will kind of benefit us through this and through post economy or post COVID. So we did run a warehouse sale that went incredibly well. We were running it off of a site that wasn't part of our current infrastructure, and so it kind of went too well, and it broke that it broke that site. So we're looking to we turned it off, and we're going to incorporate it into our current tech stack with IndustryWest in favor, which run on the same code base.
So does that mean that because you've got stock that you know you're not going to shift in the world of IndustryWest, you've done a discount, but not via your own site, so you're not damaging your own brand.
We're trying not to damage the brand, correct? I mean, for us, it came at the point as like this stock wasn't moving, and there was a cash crunch to an extent. I think everyone's feeling the cash crunch, and so work on it's not the first time we've done a warehouse sale but it was a good time to do it. And then it's something like, okay, well, this works. How do we make it more sustainable in a fashion that's not gonna, you know, crash? So that's a project we're working on. I mean, there are other projects that I think that, you know, we've had to pull back on some personalization that we couldn't take on right now, that we were working toward, redoing our checkout, and maybe even, you know, moving to some different, adding some different processing kind of tools like Apple Pay and so forth that we weren't able to take on right now as we had planned. But I mean, we'll get to it, and things, you know, I think, you know, it's just reassessing and kind of, there's always that priority stack, you know, and I think you just gotta figure out what the stack is.
I was chatting to someone about kind of about the priority stack. They're talking about putting together their Q4 marketing plan. And I kind of issued the warning of don't do it like you normally would, because you're going to be reviewing it like at least once a week. You know, there's no point in creating the full-on perfect marketing plan for Q4, because even in Q4, things are going to keep changing and you've got to be ready to adapt. So is that, you know, you said about your priority list, is that something you're reviewing on a regular basis in terms of, it's not like sit down at the start of Q2 and go, this is what we're working on. It's more of a each month, what's the best possible next project?
Yeah, no, it's each week. I mean, it's, you know, I guess on the, whether it's on the marketing side, whether, I mean, you know, dev, RSI, systems integration team, falls under me as well. I mean, as CMO of a clicks to bricks, or however you want to call it, company, D2C, B2B, we're kind of everything, you know, everything from dev to earned, owned, paid to, you know, outreach to, you know, content marketing, all falls under me. So, I mean, I think, you know, on let's just take the dev side, I mean, it's really week to week. So during this downturn, it was a good opportunity. We had been working toward implementing an ECRM, and it was a good opportunity for us to launch that. There were some things that we required of our dev team. So, I mean, I kind of paused, you know, some other stuff they were working on to ramp that up and to get those, you know, website leads into the CRM working properly. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's really week to week. I mean, I think, you know, I guess one thing I would say is that, though, I think at least here in the States, I think Q4 plans have to happen in Q3. I mean, in terms of looking for that big retail push in Q4, like, I've read a lot of stuff about this, and I was kind of on this thought path myself, was that, I mean, I think it's going to happen more in Q3 than it's going to happen in Q4. I think Q4 is going to be particularly slow.
Interesting. And I'm going to have to think about that more before I come up at all on that one. So audience, we will, on another show, we'll come back to that idea. Yeah. But one of the things which struck me as we've been chatting is that being a bootstrapped company, so you haven't got, you know, owners and shareholders and all that who have put in, you know, VCs maybe who put in loads of money and who are there going, come on, you got to deliver. You know, the fact that the business has grown organically, that must make this considerably easier, both in terms of the culture and the skill set of the people you've got, but also the fact you haven't got someone baying down, you know, breathing down your necks going, deliver, 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 or we're having our cash back.
Yeah, I mean, we joke around our board, our shareholders, our bosses, our kids, are the kids of the C-level. But no, I mean, I think, you know, it's a double-edged sword. I think it's, yes, you get to have conversations every day with the people who make the decisions. So, I mean, my CEO, the co-founder, Jordan, you know, went on the fact that, I mean, we're great friends. Like, we met prior to Industry West, and I've been aware of the company forever, and just been part of it for 5-6 years now. So I mean, I guess having that day to day consultation, us being on the same page, us understanding the give and take of what's required and what we can afford and all that. You know, it makes my life a lot easier, and not having to deal with a board that is wondering why, you know, we're not making money and why we're not also doing, you know, all this cool development stuff and bells and whistles and what are you doing over there? So, I mean, I think it makes my life a lot easier. I think, you know, the other side of the sword is that, like, again, you just don't have the money to play with. and you don't have the money to kind of to add all the bells and whistles and do all the things that, you know, maybe some other companies are doing pre this and now during this. I think, you know, what you do get is you get a company that's incredibly invested from every employee. You get a company that is full of people who are grinders, who are startup in nature, who understand what the company is going through, take what the company is going through to heart, want to see it succeed, and appreciate how much the director level or the C-level cares about everybody that's impacted by this. And it leads to some tough conversations, and it leads to, you know, some tears at times, but at the end of the day, it makes you stronger for it. And yeah, but I mean, I think it's a great team. And I think it's, if I had to choose, you know, be part of a bootstrap company that really has to look at every penny spent and look at every dollar and make sure every dollar spent returns eight, or be with a company where, you know, you're sitting back and burning through millions of cash and having to, you know, just not understanding your budget, not understanding what money is coming in, going out, and just hopefully just kind of your tactic is crossing your fingers and praying that this ends sooner than later. Like, I'm going to be where I am. I'm going to want to, you know, take the bull by the horns and try and exert some understanding of the situation and hopefully be able to pivot and make it work.
E-commerce Master Plan is supported by some of the greatest companies in the e-commerce sector. Here's a reminder of who they are.
It's safe to say that most of us have been doing more shopping online lately. And if you're an e-commerce brand, that means you might be seeing more first-time customers. But once they've made that first purchase, how do you keep them coming back? Well, that's what Klaviyo is for. Klaviyo is the ultimate email and SMS marketing platform for e-commerce brands. It gives you the tools to build your contact list, send memorable emails, automate key messages, and more. Way, way more. Whether you're launching a new business or taking your brand to the next level, Klaviyo can help you get growing faster. And it's free to get started. Visit klaviyo.com/masterplan to create your free account. That's klaviyo.com/masterplan. Klaviyo is the leading end-to-end discovery platform for e-commerce businesses, enabling merchants to deliver personalized and intelligent search and navigation experiences for their shoppers. Klaviyo's machine learning algorithm and rich NLP takes search queries beyond keyword-based matching, delivering exactly what shoppers want and more. Regardless of the platform, Klaviyo provides a seamless integration process for all retailers. Try it out for free at klaviyo.com/schedule-a-demo. That's klevu.com/schedule-a-demo.
It's time for the top tips round.
Okay, I love this section because it gives me and our listeners some really quick ideas for taking our businesses to the next level. So, Ian, you ready for these top tips?
I am. Let's go.
Marvelous. Okay, the book top tip. If everyone listening to this podcast agreed to take Friday off and read a book to make their business better, which book would you recommend?
So this is a tough one because a lot of my books are, actually right now I'm reading the latest, The Hunger Games prequel, which I'm pretty excited about.
There's a Hunger Games prequel?
Yes, it just came out like 2 weeks ago. I'm almost done.
Oh, that's my Friday gone.
There you go.
I read the three Hunger Games books, each of them in a 24-hour period. So that's Friday just done for. But anyway,
there you go. Well,
business book.
Yeah, well, it's not so much business; it's more sports. But I think there are business elements that can be taken from it. Is The Victory Machine, which is about the Golden State Warriors and their, you know, 5-year run here in the States in the NBA. And I mean, a lot of it, a fair amount of it gets into like analytics and sabermetrics, which is, you know, a hot topic for sports teams in the States. And, you know, in baseball, there's the Moneyball, Brad Pitt, Moneyball, that movie. And this is like the NBA version of that. And I mean, and then there's also a lot of just like culture stuff that I think, like, you know, how team culture can kind of be used on the business setting. But for me, what I really took away from that and I kind of moved to my team was kind of the NBA got from where it used to be all about 7-foot going through the 7 foot center, right? Like the basket is X feet high. And if you have a seven, if you have height, you're that much closer to the basket and everything runs through 7 foot center. And then with the Warriors, it became all about sabermetrics and analytics in terms of the most valuable shots are the three pointers and the free throws, which are worth 1 point. And I kind of took to my team, like, okay, what are our three pointers and what are our one pointers? And you know, how do we just kind of push those constantly? And yeah, we'll get some mid-range jumpers in there with like a sofa or a table or whatever, but like, what are the three pointers? What are the highest value shots for us? And that's something I've really kind of pushed on my team in terms of thinking about. But then there's a lot of great just kind of teamwork and culture building conversation in that book as well. So yeah, I'd say the victory machine.
Nice. Okay. The traffic top tip. Which marketing method do you either prize above all others or think doesn't get the press it deserves?
I still think email is worthwhile. You know, even though, so I'd say maybe the email doesn't get the credit it deserves. I think within a core group and segmented properly, email is important. I mean, for us, I mean, I think, you know, here's something that may be surprising is we've divested from Google a lot. We don't run on Google nearly as much as we did a year ago. And we've really kind of pushed more into the Instagram, Facebook space, Pinterest. So, I mean, I think for us, it's social spend has been important. And but yeah, I think in terms of what's not appreciated, I think email is underappreciated. It gets a bad rap.
I'm in your camp for that one. Okay, the tool top tip. Maybe a collaboration tool, a social media plugin, a phone app, or just a way of working. Is there a cool little tool you use that makes you and your team more efficient from day to day?
Yeah, so this is probably like a no-brainer, easy one, but Slack. We're big on Slack. I don't know how we lived before Slack, but Slack is important. But I guess maybe one that's a little less well-known is... So we use Nosto, N-O-S-T-O. Nosto is a personalization platform, I'm not sure if you're familiar with. But so they do like all of our on-site recommendations on the PLPs and some other personalization pieces for us. But what's really cool that they have is like this analytics tool on the back end where you can see live carts and the potential value in carts, which is something above and beyond you get out of GA. And it's all like color-coded and cool. It's like, I don't know. It makes me feel important, but it's a really cool tool, and it's. I mean, I don't know that it makes me any more efficient, but it's really useful, and I really love Nosto's analytics, and I think is a great value add. So there's those.
Cool. We'll take both of those, and then the growth top tip. If you met someone today who's focused on growing their e-commerce business from 100 orders per month to 1,000, what would be your number one tip for them?
Wow. That's tough because it's like you have to see what they're doing or not doing.
So would you say it's you have to look at the analytics and the data?
Yeah, right. I mean, I think there's always kind of this is like it's like a huge matzo ball of a question, and because like I think like you know are you doing it at a proper cost? Are you doing it at the right margins? Because I mean, just spending. Like if is it the right CPA? Like, you know, are you throwing good money after bad just to increase your growth? So, I mean, I guess for me is like, what's more important to me is, and I feel like I could go to any company and create a hockey stick, right? The hockey stick of growth. But it's like, okay, so is it an efficient hockey stick? Are you profitable? Are you making your good numbers? And then like more important than that is like, okay, after you've achieved that hockey stick, which is what I achieved in my first year at Industry West, is like, yeah, there was a hockey stick of growth because we weren't doing like our email stunk, and I brought in a new company to like kind of burn down and rebuild our SEM. But then it's like, how do you create that sustained growth or that expected growth? And so I don't know. If you're doing 100, I guess if you're doing 100 and you think you're doing enough to do 1,000, then you're kind of not. So I'd say we could all be, I don't know. I think you just need to take a deep dive. And maybe the right thing is to just kind of bring someone in to look at it for you and just talk to your peers and see around you, like, what am I doing? Look at the companies that you think are doing well and throw their URL into builtwith.com and see what they're running on, you know, see what their tech stack is like and see what you can learn from them.
I love that. Builtwith.com does not get mentioned on this podcast enough. Ian, thank you so much for all your answers today and for being so candid about the things which are going on at the moment at Industry West and Favour. Would you like to let listeners know where they can find you and the business on the web and social media, please?
Yeah, of course. So we are industrywest.com, and then Favour is infavorof.com, and then all the, you know, applicable social media platforms. And then, you know, hopefully when all this passes, you know, we will reopen our flagship showroom. We are on Crosby Street in Soho in New York City. Yeah, that's where we are, industrywest.com and infavorof.com.
Marvelous. Thank you, Ian. Thank you so much for being on the show and for being so generous with all you've shared. It's been greatly appreciated.
Yeah, thank you.
So many lessons there from our chat with Ian. I think for me, I guess one of the ones I have to clear up is builtwith.com. That is a very cool website where you can go and plug in any URL and find out what tech they've got running on their website. So if you want to find out what technology your competitors are using, it's very cool. So that I would always say for me kind of sits alongside SimilarWeb, which is the website where you can go and put in your competitors' URLs and your own and see how much traffic they get and where that traffic comes from and that kind of stuff. So for traffic driving, SimilarWeb.com. For tech stack, you want BuiltWith.com, and both, I'm 99% sure, both still give you quite a bit of data for free. So well worth checking out both of those. But back to what Ian was really talking about, in things which we can all learn is about kind of upping our analysis schedules. So we're looking on daily basis, weekly basis, constantly looking at it. I know it's a little exhausting, but you've got to be adaptable and agile, as it were, in these times to make those decisions and to keep tweaking things. I think the sales site, their strategy around that, we didn't really get into it too much, but what they've done is they've gone, right, sales are down. Because of the customer base we sell to, we're not anticipating them bouncing back anytime hugely soon. So we've got too much stock. We need to get rid of that stock. And rather than do a massive sale on their website, because we go to their website today as we're recording, you will find that there's no discount message on the Industry West homepage whatsoever. It's still solid, great brand content, great products. So what they've done is they've taken that stock they want to shift, they want to get the cash back from, and they've gone to a sale website. So one of the websites that does the massive discounts, and they're selling it there in order to protect their brand and to protect their reputation. But they crashed that website. So what they're now doing is creating on their tech stacks, they now have full control of it, a separate website where they will clear those lines. But it's such a great way of creating cash from that product without damaging your brand, is to go and shift it via another platform where people get those discounts. Because that's where you're going to find the most discount buyers. It's where you're going to find buyers who aren't your existing ones, because let's face it, they're not buying not just because of your prices, but they're not buying because now is not the right time. They don't need your product. So you need to kind of put it in front of a different audience. You could, of course, do that quite simply on the eBay platform. There's also specialists probably in your industry space for your product type and also in your country. So have a look and see what's there. See what kind of deals they're doing. I think quite a lot of them are quite busy at the moment, but it's a great way of clearing extra stock to get the cash back in the business. And so they've also kind of taken back their media spend, but they're investing in those more long-term marketing strategies and investing in, okay, I guess, re-evaluating every piece of investment to make sure that what they're spending is being spent in the absolute perfect space each time. And that requires those frequent updates and those frequent checks. Now, you can get your hands on all the notes from today's show, including those top tips, the links we mentioned, details of some related episodes, by heading over to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast. There you will also find an excellent article that Ian had written on the experience, touching on completely different things to what we talked about today, actually. So well worth going to have a read. That's on Medium, and you can find the link in the show notes. Again, if you go to ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast, you will find a link to this show. Right then, if you liked this episode, then please do make sure you check out episode 286 with Greg Spillane from Fancy, because I think you'll really enjoy that one too. Thank you so much for tuning into this and every episode of the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. I really appreciate it. And I bring you a new interview every week because I want to inspire and help as many e-commerce business owners as possible to succeed and thrive with their business. So please do tell the other e-commerce business owners you know, because I'd love to help them too. I hope you have a great week. Keep optimizing.
Thank you for listening to the E-commerce Masterplan podcast. Find out more at ecommercemasterplan.com/podcast.